On the Podium Season 2 is available now.
Like many people in this world, I had never seen an Olympic medal before.
Bringing you more remarkable stories of Olympic and Paralympic athletes and their incredible journeys to the podium.
This is my dream and it came true that day.
Find out more at the end of this podcast.
It can feel like it's attacking you.
The joint pain was horrific. I'd sit on the couch and I'd get up to go into the kitchen to make a pot of tea, and it's like I was a 90-year-old. It was just every joint was hurting.
It can take you by surprise.
And I remember one day waking up and looking at my middle section and saying, whose is that? Where did that come from?
And if you're female, it's pretty much a certainty.
You know, when you're a health professional, sometimes you think that you're immune to the changes that affect everybody else, and of course you're not.
The menopause. I'm Ruth Alexander, and this is The Food Chain from the BBC World Service. Today I'm talking to three women who've been exploring to what extent diet could help ease their menopausal symptoms. Menopause is a stage women reach, usually in middle age, when they haven't had a period for 12 months due to falling hormone levels, although symptoms can start years earlier. This programme includes general information, and it's worth saying you should speak to your own doctor for advice relevant to you and your own particular circumstances. So now, let's meet our guests. Elizabeth Ward is a dietitian from Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States.
My age is 60, and I am postmenopausal.
And she's the author of The Menopause Diet Plan, a natural guide to hormones, health, and happiness.
My friend Hillary and I, who is also a registered dietitian, were asking each other questions. Is this happening to you? Are you gaining weight, you know, inexplicably? Do you have hot flashes? And so we would go back and forth, and we would try to find resources that were, reliable and science-based that could answer our questions. And we really couldn't find all the resources in one place, especially when it came to diet and nutrition and also other lifestyle changes or habits. And so we decided to put it all in one place. I'm in the business. You know, I'm a dietitian already. It shouldn't have been so hard for me to find that information, but it was.
Sue Mbaya runs the Pause for Menopause podcast.
I'm a Zimbabwean who lives in Ethiopia. I am 56, and I started experiencing perimenopause symptoms about 8 years ago. Took me completely by surprise. You know, most of Africa is very oratory in its culture and its traditions, and very family oriented, community oriented. So you'll find that the extended family is alive and well, and often readily available to help in various stages of one's life, but for some reason, not with menopause. So I got to that age, have lots of family, had never had a single person mention anything to me about menopause. My sisters, my mother, my aunties had never. And so when I started talking to people, I found, number one, they were not willing. They were very, very, very averse to talking about menopause and actually didn't have a lot of information by virtue of that hush-hush. That's why I thought, you know what, I need to do something about this hush-hush.
Our third guest is Fiona Staunton, who's 47 and from Dublin, Ireland.
I'm in an induced menopause due to breast cancer at age 45. So I experienced, it's a bit like falling off a cliff, all the symptoms straight away overnight.
A chef, she now runs a virtual cookery course for menopausal women. She calls it Fiona's Food for Life.
So I felt that if I could arm people with information about diet and lifestyle and easy recipes and how to plan and how to cook, then they'd be much better set up for the natural start of menopause. And obviously my own induced menopause at 45 meant that I was experiencing it firsthand.
What was that experience like?
It just happened so quickly. So the joint pain was horrific. I'd sit on the couch and I'd get up to go into the kitchen to make a pot of tea, and it's like I was a 90-year-old. It was just every joint was hurting. Now, I will say by the time I got back to the couch at my cup of tea, it had eased. And also the fatigue and insomnia, that vicious cycle was just so difficult. And the third thing that I really found was the brain fog. It was, I was a busy person with two young kids, my own business, you know, and it all came together. It was pretty challenging at the time.
Sounds really intense.
It was.
Sue, what changes did you notice?
I think the hot flushes were the first signal, right? And I think it was probably 4 or 5 months in that I figured, hang on a minute, right? It was like the light bulb went on in the back of my head. But the hot flushes were the first.
At first, you were having hot flushes, but you didn't realize why. You didn't know what was happening.
I didn't realize why. And it actually took me probably 5 or 6 months or thereabouts before I started thinking, could this be? It was almost like a light bulb moment one day, because having had a hysterectomy 12 years beforehand or something like that, I hadn't been having my monthly periods. So there was nothing to broadcast and warn me, you know, that, hey, this change is starting. So it was just out of nowhere. I had these horrible headaches, didn't understand why. But I think, again, you know, as a professional woman in a very high, high stress environment, I think the brain fog was absolutely devastating.
Elizabeth, what were the aspects of menopause that you struggled with most of all?
Well, I'm not sure I was paying complete attention because I was very busy taking care of my elderly mother for 3 years during my perimenopause. And I had 3 teenagers in the house and I had a marriage that I had to attend to. So there was a lot.
So no wonder you felt tired.
Of course I was tired. I was beyond exhausted every day. So I didn't think much of it, but I noticed the weight creeping on. I definitely had more mood swings, but again, could I attribute that to my situation or was it perimenopause? And my periods were very irregular. They became very irregular. And I did have hot flashes. But I have to say that the most surprising thing for me is that, you know, when you're a health professional, sometimes you think that you're immune to the changes that affect everybody else. And of course, you're not. Just because you know about them doesn't mean that they will not happen to you.
So as a health professional, you can tell us, what's going on in a woman's body at this time to be causing all these symptoms?
Well, you know, under normal circumstances, which is your periods change in your 40s, they start to become irregular. What's happening is you've got less estrogen floating around in your body, and the ovaries make estrogen, and the body is directing the ovaries to stop making estradiol, which is a very strong form of estrogen. And now the problem is that nearly every tissue in your body has estrogen receptors. So that tissue is expecting that estrogen. Your brain tissue, your heart tissue, your joints, your muscles, all expecting the estrogen and not getting the estrogen. In terms of weight gain, it's very hard to tease out what is menopause weight gain and what is weight gain due to aging and reduced physical activity. As we get older, we tend to slow down. When I was a 30-year-old mother chasing around 3 young kids, I was always on my feet, always, always, always doing something. So it's difficult to say, is it menopause or is it aging? Because if you look at men, they also gain weight. Now, having said that, one thing is for sure, that when you gain weight, it will likely go to your midsection. Again, another surprise for me, who never gained weight in her midsection. So you get the abdominal fat, the menopause muffin, whatever you want to call it. It tends to gravitate towards the abdomen, and no one knows exactly why that happens. We just know that it happens.
And that even if you are a dietitian who knows about the importance of keeping weight off the middle, menopause brings it to you.
Menopause will get you, yes. It will get you to a certain extent. So even if you don't gain weight, you might find, you know, you can pinch an inch or two around your midsection. And that has to do with the loss of estrogen.
And so to what degree then can diet help with any or all of these symptoms? Elizabeth, as the dietitian, start us off here.
Okay, well, it can help a lot, which is, you know, I'm a dietitian, so I believe that nutrition and a healthy lifestyle is the way to go during this phase of life. A woman will live between 30 and 40% of her life in the postmenopausal state. Losing estrogen means that you have an increased risk for gaining weight,
heart disease, you know, osteoporosis, different conditions that are connected to estrogen. So what we have to do with food and lifestyle is help to counteract that loss.
If you go to the doctor, I mean, they'll recommend that to a lot of women that, well, you know, you can have hormone replacement therapy, mm-hmm. and that will help boost estrogen levels, protect against osteoporosis, mm-hmm. but it's not suitable for everyone.
No.
To what degree is diet something that you can fall back on if you're not going to have hormone replacement therapy?
Well, it's the only thing that you can fall back on if you're not taking hormones. But I can tell you that there's no magic food. There's no magic meal. There's no magic supplement that will mitigate all of the effects of menopause. There's only healthy eating patterns.
So diet isn't a replacement for hormone replacement therapy. It's complementary.
It's complementary because, it's important to remember that we're still aging in the process, and age plays a role in our health. So we have to do everything we can, whether that's taking the hormones and eating a healthy diet, or simply eating a healthy diet, exercising, not smoking, et cetera, all the other healthy lifestyle habits that you should follow.
Fiona, hormone replacement therapy wasn't an option for you. Is that why you turned your focus to food?
Yeah, well, Ruth, I really had a very healthy diet beforehand. And I know a lot of people have kind of said to me, how did you get cancer? You're the healthiest person I know. So I continued with. So I suppose I was set up well in that I was eating a varied diet, lots of different colors, omega-3s, all of those good things. But then what happened was, because I know I can't have HRT and I was suffering these debilitating symptoms, I looked to see what could I focus in on. And that's when I kind of discovered phytoestrogens, which are plant-based compounds, and they kind of mimic estrogen in your body. And so they may help in terms of relieving some of the symptoms. So I looked around that and included lots of more of those in my diet. So say, for example, for flaxseed. So I teach people how to make a flaxseed focaccia bread. So a small little bit of effort, and then you freeze it and you've got a beautiful flaxseed bread ready for whenever you need it. Or I make lovely chocolate seed bars. So you've got your flax seeds, your sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, dried fruit, all of these lovely things in it. Soy, I look at edamame beans are really my favorite because they are a young soybean. And you can buy them frozen. So I have them in the freezer ready to go.
So phytoestrogen, plant-based estrogen, is found in seeds, nuts, legumes.
Yep, dried fruit, sesame seeds, berries, cruciferous vegetables. Yeah, you said lentils and chickpeas.
The Association of Dietitians in the UK says if eaten regularly and in sufficient quantities, phytoestrogens can start to have mild estrogen-like effects, and they seem to work better for some women than others. Elizabeth, as a dietitian, what's your view on the power of plant-based estrogen?
Well, phytoestrogens are much weaker sources of estrogen than estradiol, which is a very, very powerful form of estrogen that your ovaries produce. Eating phytoestrogens, mainly from plant foods, is probably the best strategy for a lot of reasons, but it doesn't work for all women. And the theory is that it may be because of a woman's gut health, that if she isn't eating enough fiber and she doesn't have a healthy gut, she may not metabolize these phytoestrogens into the compounds that actually help to reduce menopausal symptoms. So it's quite theoretical, but that's the reason why perhaps it doesn't work for all women. I think the bottom line, though, is really that a plant-based diet, which we know will have a lot of phytoestrogens in it, is the way that menopausal women should eat.
And if it doesn't have a huge effect, it's not going to do you any harm.
No, absolutely not.
Sue, have you tried filling your diet with nuts and seeds, and have you noticed any benefits from that?
Absolutely. In fact, my story was a little bit more like what not to do, because I've always been very slim, very slender in my frame. And, you know, slim people get away with eating anything earlier on in life, right? And so there were some basic things that I just never learned how to do. Drink water, stay away from carbs, and take a lot of fiber. So I then had to start all of those disciplines at the time that I was going through perimenopause. So the first, you know, point I think for me was replacing sugary starch. I love pastries. I love pastries. Healthy oils. I had to learn how to eat avocados. Ugh, never ate an avocado before this stage of my life. So I had to go there. I don't know that I can say that I've noticed the benefit, but I think intuitively I know this is what I'm supposed to do.
Sue says she'd found the changes in her body quite confronting.
And I remember one day waking up and looking at my middle section and saying, whose is that? Where did that come from? Right? And I know that we are told not to let it impact our image, our self-image, but for the average woman, it does. When I'm in the boardroom or addressing a conference and I'm used to looking a certain way and all of a sudden I don't look that way.
It's kind of one of the worst times in your life to try to calorie count, particularly if it's not something that you've ever had to do before. Elizabeth, what tips would you have for anyone else listening, thinking, I recognise this and I just don't know where to start?
It's really hard because if you're having a lot of symptoms, including lack of proper sleep, your appetite will be out of control during the day. I can guarantee that. And that has to do with the hunger and the satiety hormones. They're just, sleep rules your appetite. And one of the things that I find with women is they do not eat enough protein. And that sends them binging on carbohydrates for the rest of the day. So I'm a big fan of protein. It helps to keep you fuller for longer. And most, nearly all protein foods are full of vitamins and minerals. And if they're plant-based, phytonutrients, which are beneficial compounds. So getting enough protein, I recommend 20 to 30 grams at every meal and work it into your snacks if you can. And if that is the one change that you make, let's say tomorrow you start doing that, I think you'll find a big difference in your appetite.
Fiona, I wonder, do you know of any healthy comfort foods? Is that even a thing? Can you have a healthy comfort food?
Of course you can. You can have, I think a comfort food is something that you, maybe you grew up and your granny used to make and it's some traditional dish that you might have. So absolutely it can be. If people are saying they would go for that carbohydrate type of snack, I have either 85% chocolate in the fridge or I have those chocolate seed bars I was talking about. And I know that what I'm having is going to be really nutritious, but it's also satisfying. It's going to keep me going to that next meal.
Sue, you were having a good old laugh at the idea of healthy comfort foods, but have you found any dishes that you now find really satisfying and that you'll turn to in a weak moment?
I was just going to say it's an oxymoron. I mean, the nuts were a really, really important turning point for me. So what I would do was I would do my own home mix. So I would take cashew, more almonds, some ground nuts, and then roast those in the oven, sprinkle some raisins, and also some other berries that I would have, and then just have them available as a snack. And I found that that was both satisfying, and I don't know, I think maybe it's just the, just growing up as a child, having nuts, you know, as a snack, that it felt like something that made me feel calmer. So yes, the nuts have really been helpful.
All this actually sounds like advice that a lot of people could take, you know, menopausal women or not. But one thing that is quite particular to women at this age and stage is osteoporosis, the risk of weakening bones. So how important is diet to offset that risk?
Oh, it's immensely important. And living in the United States, in the northern part of the United States, I'm very focused on our vitamin D intake, our calcium intake. Vitamin D is made through sunshine, strong ultraviolet light. A lot of the world doesn't get enough vitamin D. Vitamin D is very necessary for bone health. You know, you probably need a supplement for vitamin D. I take a supplement all year round. And along with that, you have to do exercise. You know, you must exercise in order to keep your bones dense. So it's a combination of, a healthy plant-based diet with adequate protein. It really does, like as you said, come down to a diet that's
good for a lot of people. I mean, everyone in the family, it's not like the menopausal woman in the family needs to be on a certain diet, but there are definitely certain nutrients that she needs to pay particular attention to.
What's certainly some good news here is that you're making it sound like eating during the menopause or in the stages running up to it doesn't need to be a dull affair. Fiona, how easy is it to make healthful food that will do you good during the menopause and certainly no harm, to make it tasty?
I believe with a little bit of planning, it is very easy, and planning is the trick.
Also easier said than done, planning when you're busy. That's the only problem, isn't it?
So what I try and teach in my course is I give 6 weeks of meal plans so people can see how it might work with all of the different dishes, and then make minimal effort for maximum return. So every time I make, say, for example, a red lentil dal, I will make a huge big batch of that and then I will freeze it, and then it is there and it's ready for lunch. So for example, yesterday I made the edamame pea salad with feta, lemon juice, olive oil, pepper and salt, but I make enough that that'll do 2 to 3 days. So it might be dinner today, it might be lunch tomorrow and lunch the next day, but just really being easy on yourself. So each of my recipes are easy. They're not complicated. You're not going to have to spend the whole day in the kitchen, but it's working with the ingredients that are around you and nutritious and making it easy as possible.
I must say, dinner sounds great around at your house. Sue, you're shaking your head. This are you suggesting this isn't realistic to be this organized and this healthy?
Well, you know, I was actually just thinking that it's probably, I have to be true to myself and say where I live in the part of the world that I live in the southern context. And even in rich countries, developed countries, it's really difficult to talk about olive oil. You know, some of the things that we're talking about that we know work really, really well for women during this transition, the menopause transition, are inaccessible to a lot of women, right? And so we know that as much as we're saying go whole grain, go brown, stay away from white pasta, go with the brown pasta, it's cheaper. It's more affordable to eat unhealthy. The white, the refined, over superly refined foods are cheaper on the shelf. And so I personally am privileged. I am able to access whole grain, bread, full grain. But I know that most women in my neighborhood have no choice but to eat the white, super refined, which does nothing for them. So I just wanted to be fair and share that experience as well, that we mustn't forget about those women.
Elizabeth, you're a dietitian in America, and there are a lot of people there who struggle to afford good food. What would your advice be to somebody who has limited means and limited access to some of the more fashionable ingredients today?
Yeah, you're definitely right. Highly refined foods are cheaper to buy. In the long run, they are more expensive in the sense that you are sacrificing your health because they don't have as many nutrients. Now, having said that, I always tell women, do the best you can. It's not a crime. It's not even bad to eat refined grains. It's something that I do every day. But if you eat things to excess, if you eat certain elements to excess, that may be the problem. So go ahead. White rice, if that's, again, if it's part of your culture, if it's what you prefer, if you love white bread, certainly enjoy it. But again, within the realm of what your personal needs are. And you know, we cannot expect everybody to afford or even like all the elements of the, let's say, the Mediterranean diet, because that's not the way the whole world eats. So again, choose the healthiest possible foods that you can afford and just pay attention to the portions.
And don't beat yourself up. I've not yet experienced menopause or perimenopause symptoms yet. So I'm grateful for the chance to have this conversation. I feel forewarned is forearmed. I also wonder what advice you would each give your younger self. Sue?
I would definitely say pay attention to the advice in spite of your body shape. If you're slender, if you're bigger, the same rules apply. Healthy eating equals an easier, potentially easier experience with menopause later in life.
So make changes now before you're having to do everything at this difficult time.
Absolutely. Develop the discipline, right, of eating healthy, even if it doesn't seem to impact your body shape, looking at it as a tool in your hand long term.
Fiona, what would you say to the younger you?
I think it's a hard one. It's not really a food one. I think I'd probably say to take time to yourself and slow down. Because I would have spent a lot of time, you know, running around invincible, doing loads and loads of things. And now I'm having to learn meditation and stopping and looking after myself. So I think if I could say to my younger self, I'd say stop and take time out and slow down a little bit.
Elizabeth.
I would say don't be so shocked about what happens to your body. Just because you know what's going to happen doesn't mean that you can prevent it. And you will need to find ways to work with it.
My thanks to Elizabeth Ward in Boston, Massachusetts, Fiona Staunton in Dublin, and Sue Bayer in Addis Ababa for sharing their experiences and knowledge. What food tips would you share with your younger self? You can get in touch by emailing thefoodchain@bbc.co.uk. Alicia did just that after listening to our episode, The Recipe Translators. She's an Australian living in the Swedish part of Finland.
I had a bit of a giggle when I heard the podcast. I have to admit, I've actually translated some recipes from Swedish to English. A deciliter is 100 millilitres. But then people also use a centiliter, which is 10 millilitres. In Finland, if you go and order a drink at a restaurant, you'll ask for example, 4 centilitres of whiskey. Or you'll ask for 16 centilitres or 20 centilitres of wine. Then with translating recipes, it can be difficult because a tablespoon is 15 millilitres. In Australia, it's 20 millilitres. In Northern Europe, they often use koffiekop, or cup, which is 150 mils. But in Australia, a cup is 250 mils. I end up rewriting a lot of my favourite recipes on postcards and put them into a photo album. Anyway, thank you for a great podcast.
And thank you, Alicia, for getting in touch. From me and the rest of the team, Beatrice Pickup and Elizabeth Mai, thanks for listening and join us again next week.
Your best performance on the biggest stage when it counts, that's every athlete's dream.
And just hearing like the national anthem and everything around you, it was a very special moment.
This is my dream and it came true that day.
Like many people in this world, I had never seen an Olympic medal before.
It makes you proud to have believed until the end. It was just magical.
On the Podium is back, bringing you more remarkable stories of Olympic and Paralympic athletes and their incredible journeys to the podium.
Oh, you know, realistically, after having a baby, you're not going to be able to run very fast.
That photo, I think it represents so much more than a silver medal for me. It represented a lot of things that I went through.
On the Podium from the BBC World Service.
We train hard every day in my mind. It's Olympics.
Search for On the Podium wherever you found this podcast.